Senate will come to order. Reports from standing committees.
February the 13th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 97, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 13th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 229, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross in session, excuse Senator Byrne, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 13th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 235, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross in session, excuse Senator Byrne, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Okay, now we're back on Senate File 1, third reading, Amendment Number 13. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading, Amendment Number 13, Budgets Affected 49, Department of Family Services.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. President, move third reading amendment number 13 to Senate File 1. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, this amendment increases Section 49, Department of Family Services, by $109,000. This money would go to the program called Father Factor. And some of you... Well, all of you should have received a little handout on what the Father Factor is. Before, one thing I'd like to share with the body in explaining the need for this for these funds, I'd like to share a quote that I think I'm pretty sure you're all familiar with. And that quote is, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." The reason I use that quote is that, as you all know, even under the best of times, it's difficult to raise a child. If you have a two-parent family, if you have adequate income, if you've got adequate housing, if you've got a family that's compatible, if you've got health insurance, if you've got all those things, it's still very difficult to raise a child. You start taking some of those things away from the family, and it becomes even more difficult. It's true that it takes a village to raise a child. What the Father Factor program does is it works with divorced, primarily divorced or separated fathers, and tries to get them involved in the lives of their kids. Oftentimes, it helps to makes an effort to get them to live up to their obligations. Too often, what happens is that is when people get divorced, when they get separated, there's a lot of anger, a lot of bitterness, and many of these men, I'm not sure how many, but I know it's fairly common, they seek support in a bar. You know, criticizing their ex, complaining about their child support. And this is a way to divert some of those individuals back into a constructive situation. You know, recently, we heard from the Child Support Enforcement Agency, and there are a lot of people, a lot of primarily males, who are not living up to their family obligations. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But this program seeks to get some of their macho, destructive attitudes into something a little bit more constructive so that it does place them in a way that they can reunite with their child. And hopefully the goal is to limit juvenile delinquency. As you all know, Wyoming is either number one or number two in terms of juvenile delinquency incarceration. And, you know, I think part of that is our macho attitude, you know, that, you know, we don't like to show our feelings with our children and with other people. And it's, you know, we've been talking about how right now it's really not the best of times economically, but there is one industry that has shown some growth, and that's, of course, the prison system. You know, that just seems to keep growing and growing. This program would seek to minimize that growth. And that's basically what this program is designed to do, Mr. President. And one thing I might share with the body before finish my presentation, finish with another quote that I found on this cup of Starbucks. It says, success in life is that your kids want to spend time with you once they've grown up. So hopefully you'll take that into consideration when you vote on this this amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, on and against the amendment. Folks, the there are a lot of terrific, fantastic private organizations out there. But as you go out to decide whether we're going to support the United Way or any of the other groups, you have to decide what is the proper use of government funds, your tax dollars. Article 3, Section 36 of our Constitution says, no appropriation shall be made for charitable, industrial, educational, or benevolent purposes to any person, corporation, or community not under the absolute control of the state, nor to any denominational or sectarian institution or association. And the reason we set those guidelines is so that we talk about what the rules of the game here. We're collecting taxes to run a government and to run things that the government controls and that we're responsible for. And if you begin to go down the road of trying to decide which of the charitable organizations that you like the most and you'd like to support, it's a slippery slope. I'd urge you to vote no.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Chairman, it would appear from the amendment this is strictly federal funds and that we can just increase the federal funds and put it to this program without any consequences. And I would ask, excuse me, Mr. President, I would ask the sponsor on his second time or the Appropriations Committee, is that an accurate reading of the amendment? And if so, what's going on here? Because usually there's some kind of a matching requirement. We vote for this. Are we denying these federal funds to some other purpose?
Anyone else wish to speak before Senator Esquivel have his second term? Senator Esquivel.
Mr. President, the good senator from Natrona County is correct. These will all be federal funds, and there is $48,000 in the budget right now for this particular program. This would increase it by $109,000 from the TANF funds. I might suggest also that, as you all know, it costs about $50,000 a year to support someone in prison. And from some of the statistics that I've received from the Department of Child Support, there's quite a few individuals out there that are not fulfilling their obligations. Some have been incarcerated. And if this can help just a couple of parents to live up to their expectations, up to their obligations, it would more than pay for itself. And these would be strictly federal funds, Mr. President. I ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 13 to Senate File 1 pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson? Bebout? Burns? Case? Coe? Cooper? DeCaria? Dockstader? Esquibel? Geis? Hastert? Honeycutt? Jennings? Johnson? Landon? Larson? Martin? Massey? Meyer? Nicholas? Perkins? Peterson? Ross? Schiffer? Scott? Sessions? Townsend? Basie? Von Flatern? President Hines?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote close. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
The amendment has passed. We are now on amendment number 15. The reading clerk will please read in that amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 15, budgets affected. Section 205, education school finance.
Senator Coe.
President, move third reading amendment number 15 to Senate File 1, Education School Finance, and first of all, apologize to the body for bringing an amendment of this size on third reading. The department actually was trying to compile some stuff, and we didn't get it put together soon enough for the second reading. But I think the really important thing about this amendment is it continues the data gathering part of what's going on over there. Hopefully take the reporting burden off the local districts. And this process, I think, with this amendment is so very, very important as we march down the road of recalibration after the budget session. And with that, I'll defer to my other sponsor on the amendment, Senator Jennings, for a further explanation.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. From the boss of the Tech Freak. What we have out there right now, and we've been trying to pull this data together for several years now, is that we have a whole bunch of different schools on a whole bunch of different software plans. And the idea is that we want to bring them all together so we can start downloading the data that we've all voted on getting year after year and pull that in. And we have some districts, then we don't want to go in and tell them, this is what you have to do and you have to change your software program. So we have to write these front-end programs and stuff. So my understanding of this is what we're needing to do is this is what we need to do to put in to finish getting those communication programs so that all that data that we all ask the department to get for us all the time can come in, be compiled directly. We cut out the handwork, the forms, and all that kind of stuff on the local basis, pull it in here. Then you can ask something about education. And like the chairman said, as we go into recalibration here, this would be nice to have that in place because when there's a question about ADM or ELL or acreage and all that kind of stuff, then it could be pulled together easier. I'd hope you to support this.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question, and we had dinner with all of our school districts the other night, and they told me they had 84 reports that they have to submit to either the Department of Education or to the state superintendent or whatever. Is this going to help with that, or are we going to create more burdens?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess my question are along some of the same lines of those just asked by the good senator from Fremont County. Having spent considerable time in the profession, considerable time on the committee, have a good deal of respect for both the sponsors on this, but I'll have to say that as I watch these budget amendments come, there seems that too many of them are really afterthoughts. And I sometimes suspect that within the afterthought is a bit of impulse. And that's not my accusation necessarily for this amendment. But I would have to ask, you know, having, like I say, served on education for some time, all the discussion that goes on in the interim all the interaction and all the interchange that goes on between the committee and those people in the profession, why is it that this comes at this time as it appears to be a bit of an afterthought rather than a bill, because of all the bills that we bring forth quite often, the omnibus bill and all the consideration that we give to education? Why in this form and why at this moment? And I would also ask, in regard to the amount of discussion that you've had with the department and their ability to deal with this, not only as a department, but also the ability, as the former senator said, those school districts out there that are struggling at this point with a lot of the data gathering. And it just seems to me that if somehow we can all get on the same page in regard to how we're going to manage this, we're going to be much more effective, much more efficient. Neither for nor against the amendment, I just feel that there's some questions need to be answered in regard to the motive.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, a couple questions for the sponsors. First of all, can you tell us roughly what the budget is and the number of employees that the Department of Ed has in this reporting, in their school finance information reporting system division? And also on lines 33 and 34, it appears to me that we're dictating to the local districts in terms of their professional development, and understand that's one of those categories that we fund separately for training and to enhance the quality of education. It now appears that we're going to dictate to school districts, and what I want to know is, what are they giving up so they, in their terms of professional training, to meet the needs of Third Reading Amendment 15.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, some of you will remember I stood on this floor and begged for technology money when we were first setting this up. And I sat in those data meetings and stuff. And I have to tell you, this was supposed to have been done a long time ago. I know we got the numbers. You know, each student now has their own numbers, the whole thing. And I don't understand. I know what data costs, and I know the effort that was put into it when I was part of it. And I know I've been in I'm the old person in the junior high, I might add, but in the media center where they set up the technology training, and teachers come in repeatedly with the trainer there on their lunch hours, on their prep periods, and continually are being trained on the data systems, the student management system, all kinds of stuff. So maybe tell me what's gone wrong and what's happening.
Senator Jennings, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over here in Fremont County, there is a lot of reporting over the years that we've piled onto the schools. And we'll do this program or that program, and then we just put a line in there that says, and report back to the Joint Education Committee, you know, on their interim or whatever. What we're trying to do is get rid of that paperwork so that the State Department can pull the information and then develop the report right there without making the school districts expend man hours going through step by step and checking off and filling out the forms. As far as the department, why now, and I may be corrected on this, but from what I understand is we had the department had the word out to everybody who's left, who doesn't have the front-end software, and I guess there's a couple of holdouts out there that or more that didn't have the front-end stuff to where their specialized system would communicate with the department's specialized system. So we can put this up or down, but it's going to be back for recalibration anyway. When we get it done now, get the communication with all the districts and the state put together, it'll cut down on the paperwork, it'll free up more man hours in the districts, and it possibly, I mean, you can take it right down to the classroom on some of the reports that the teachers have to do, is if they can go in there and do roll right there, have that data in their system ready to be pulled or downloaded, then just the simple thing is of ADMs would be all computerized, entered once, and away we go. So
The whole idea behind this is make it easier, free up some man hours, free up some reporting time, still get the data that we've put in statute that we want to get. So vote it up or vote it down. Sooner or later, we're going to have to do it anyway.
Senator Coe,
for your second time. Mr. President, in answer to one of the questions, the amendment itself was initiated from an independent review of the Department's Information System Capacity and Capabilities, referred to as a Rich Cedar Report. And I don't know when that was received in by the Department of Ed, but that's where this amendment came from. In answer to the good senator from Fremont County, this really should eliminate some of the reporting burden. I'm not sure if my co-sponsor alluded to that, but in answer to the good medium height senator from KC, that's not near as tall as some people on the floor, paragraph 4 specifically says that the funds that are available within the school foundation program. So I'm assuming when they go into the professional development funds, these funds will be dispersed that are already in the program. Now, I don't think they'll be dispersed within the model. But that's my understanding of what happens here. As for the budget, I can't answer that question, but I'm sure it's a bunch. I mean, everything in education is a bunch, but I'm not actually sure what the budget is for this particular item.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 51 to Senate file? The sponsors have already spoke twice. The question being third reading amendment 15 to Senate file 1. Shall this amendment pass? All in favor say aye. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, line 2, other funds increase amount by $250,000. I think it, under our rules, requires a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. We'll have a roll call on this amendment. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. No. Bebout. No. Burns. No. Case. Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, no. Dockstader, no. Esquibel, no. Geis, aye. Hastert, no. Honeycutt, no. Jennings, aye. Johnson, no. Landon, no. Larson, no. Martin, no. Massey, no. Meyer, no. Nicholas, aye. Perkins, no. Peterson, Ross,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
no.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
no.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines,
no.
Cooper, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 8 ayes, 22 noes.
While you vote, the amendment has failed. We are now on third reading amendment number 16. Reading clerk, please read that in.
Senate file 1, third reading number 16, budget affected section 3, capital construction.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 16 to Senate file 1. Members of the Senate, this goes in. There's no money involved in this, but simply goes into the footnote 4 on page 38. Starts on page 37, but it relates to the dollars that we will be putting in for the planning for a new state office building. And this comes by way of a former senator that used to sit right over here, and who you all remember has such a passion for doing things right, particularly not only with regards to this building, but whatever we do in the Capitol complex. And during JAC hearings, JAC actually asked for some comments from that former senator about where we go and her thoughts on a new state office building. And I want to read you some of her comments to the committee. I believe we must have guiding principles which will create a building that will stand the test of time. It must be a building that helps define who we are as a people in the 21st century. It will stand in the Capitol complex, along with the Capitol, the Supreme Court, the Barrett, Hirschler, and Hathaway buildings for a great while. We cannot afford to make the mistakes of either the Hathaway or the Hirschler buildings. Both have been met with extreme criticism for their failures to meet at least one of the critical aspects of a building's architectural success, that being form and function. At 30 or 40 years, they are anchors of the complex and unlikely to be replaced in the near future, and therefore we have a responsibility to ensure that the new building is recognized not for its failure, but for its excellence. All this does is go in and amend the footnote with regard to what we should be doing. The first part of the amendment, page 38, line 1, talks about a simple, modern, classical building that shall complement and not compete with the Capitol. It also should take in the historical context of this district, the general Capitol complex, and should be defined in terms of in essence, beauty. In essence, not just what we saw as a member of the Select Committee on Legislative Facilities, the drawings of which were just basically sketches of maybe some proposed buildings for a new office building with lots of windows and whatever else. But construction techniques as they are now, whatever we do should complement this Capitol and the Supreme Court that we're so very proud of now and the buildings that we will then be proud of in the future. The second part of the amendment talks about the architectural design and the construction components, that these things be advertised, let them stand on their own, seek input for public review and comment after the preliminary design submission deadline. Public comments shall be considered in awarding the final design and construction contract. So we're just going to try to open that up as much as possible. I don't think when JAC came out with footnote 4, we're just trying to improve upon that footnote, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to divide the amendment. Division 1 would be the entire amendment accepting the sentence at line 16 through 19 that reads, the exterior height of the building shall not exceed the height of the roof of the state capitol, considered to be the main roof of the capitol building. That sentence would be Division 2. The balance is Division 1.
Okay. Further discussion on Division 1? Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would hope we would resist putting this kind of a thing into the budget. Much of that is very subjective, and I don't know how you create a setback to create a liveliness and variety of streetscape. And I mean, come on. Let's hire an architect. The Capitol Facilities Committee is very capable, I think very capable, and have done a good job in making those kinds of decisions to make sure that whatever we do here is going to be in good taste. We have divided out, and I apologize for talking about the other section, but we have divided that out. But that's another criteria that's dead set here that is, I think, entirely subjective. We don't know the what may be functional. And function, I'm sorry, but function is a very important part of what we're going to do. And I just think we should resist putting this kind of thing into, it isn't in statute, but it is in a budget amendment when we go forward, and leave those decisions to the people that are going to have to make the decisions, and not try to put that kind of subjective thing in legislation. And I urge you to defeat this part of the amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, to echo my friend from Teton County, just some of the words picked out of here. Simple, modern, classical, complement but not compete, provide defined with setbacks to create a liveliness and variety. That's, you're describing a wine, not a building. Let's stick to what we're here for.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, not knowing much about architecture or what you go, but I do know that when you go, if you go to design a building and you have an idea of what you want, these are the words you use. Most of us, you have a plan in your mind, and you use words like this to give to your architect so that they know what those words mean. They know what a simple, classical modern building that will look at, I would not advocate making it look like our current library, but I will tell you that those were parts of the words that were used when you start to go looking for an architect that understands buildings, that understands design, and understands function. They're not just words picked out from the air. So I would like us to do something besides build a square box with walls that have to be moved in and out, and parts of it are unused, cannot be used, and that leaks all the time. So I'll just say that, and hopefully we could come up with something that we are proud of and that doesn't have to have reoccurring work brought into it. It will be built correctly in the first place. And I will say this, I know who's going to be listening, but I looked at the box on the preliminary designs. It looks like a prison. It also has a flat roof. And we have had these arguments in school design repeatedly. What does a flat roof do in Wyoming? The water goes into it, it freezes, it expands it, and it leaks. Let's come up with something that not only is aesthetically pleasing, and something that is part of history, but something that we don't go into and continually repair. Thank you.
Senator Larson, for your second time.
Yeah, I hope we can do that. I really do. And I would applaud all of those efforts. But to define that in legislation, when many of those things are subjected, we mentioned let's not have a flat roof, but we also did over on the other building, don't have it any. You're going to have a hard time, folks, getting a slanted roof to be no higher than that and have more than a story. Leave it to the architect and the committee that is going to do it. They know what they want. They can put all of those things in it. But it does not need to be in legislation, be it a budget footnote. Many of these things are highly subjective. Highly subjective. I personally may not agree with all of those in there, and I think many people in the state may not agree. And we have to consider function. And to put that in there, I think you're limiting function. So I would, again, ask you to vote against it. Let the committee do it.
Senator Session, for your second.
Mr. President, excuse me, just one thing that I would like to say on this is what brought this out, what brought, I guess, just the conversation forward, and is the fact that take a look at the preliminary sketches of the existing building. Do you want that stuck over there on the other side of the street? It has no form, except it's a block. It has no aesthetic value. And I understand within the designs that I have looked at, or the plans, it also uses outdated glass covering over three quarters of it. outdated, yes, probably a very good economical move. We could probably get it for a lot less. But we have to ask ourselves, what kind of conversation do we want to have about this building, and what do we want to make stand here? I hope for 100 years. So it started the conversation. I hope whether it stays, I would like to see it in here for at least a year, but so the conversation can go forward, and the building does not go forward without the conversation. Thank you.
Question been called for on third reading amendment number 16 to Senate File 1. All in favor of Division 1, which is the whole amendment with the exception of the one sentence in between line or on line 16 through 19. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
That division have failed. Division 2. Discussion on Division 2, Senator Massey.
Mr. President, point of order, I don't think that with the failure of that first one, I don't think Division 2 can stand on its own, and I think that should be withdrawn.
Okay. Division 2 have been withdrawn. Next amendment for our consideration is amendment, third reading amendment number 25. The reading clerk will please read it in.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 25, budget affected, section 3, capital construction.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 25 to Senate File 1. This is goes into the same area, but a little different approach here, folks. All this does is provide for a legislative oversight committee composed of 3 members from the House, 3 members from the Senate, 1 member from Senate Appropriations, 1 member from the House Appropriations, so as to have some oversight and review and approve the exterior plan of the state office building. And that's basically what it does. It just involves us. It is our building. It involves us in at least some form or fashion to have some say into what it looks like. And I don't think this would be too obtrusive.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and against this amendment. First, Mr. President, I have a question of how much it's going to cost. I guess it's going to come out of the planning money. I don't suppose the cost to be excessive. There will be some, though. Second, you've got a legislative group reviewing and approving plans. I thought that was an executive branch function, so I think we may be trespassing on the functions of the executive branch. But more importantly, Mr. President, we're having a problem in this legislature. We are getting more and more and more special and select committees. We are moving more and more and more toward a full-time legislature where people that have to go out and earn a living cannot afford to serve. And we're seeing it. We're getting, and if you look at the legislature as a whole, we're getting excessive turnover. Both parties are having difficulty recruiting candidates, and it's hurting the legislature. And yes, there are occasions where you need a special committee or select committee, and there have been some very good work done by some of them. But it's getting out of hand. We're putting too many demands on people's time, and we're making it more and more difficult for the very people we want to have serving in the legislature to be able to serve. And I think it's time we stopped just creating these things that have dropped the hat. I think this is best not handled with another special select committee, and I would urge the Senate to defeat this amendment.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President, if I could just ask a question of the sponsor. I've heard
some chatter going back and forth on during this session about whose responsibility this building is. And I've heard that it's ours. I've heard people say it's our building. So if it's our building, then why are we depending on the executive branch to make the decisions for our building? So if it's our building, we probably ought to do this.
Senator Larson.
Well, just a point of order. A lot of us back here don't know what amendment we're on, Mr. President. Okay. Amendment 25, is that correct?
Yes. Senator Dockstader.
Maybe from a little different angle there, and I understand there'll be costs associated with that, but as you appoint people to these types of positions, do you look at it as if the good senator from Casper brought up a point, it is our building. It's our building from the entire state, not just from one city. So who gets an appointment to that committee?
Questions? Mr. Vice President, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. That would be at the discretion of the Speaker and the President who gets appointed to it. I don't envision this being that much work, per se. I don't envision it being the work of a select committee. What I envision is at least to have some input simply into a building, and it is our building, and this building is our building because we hold the purse strings. That building, when we build a new building, is going to be our building because we hold the purse strings. We ought to have some say in the thing. And this is just a way that we thought up that that would give us some sort of input to make sure that it meets what we want on behalf of our constituents.
Question being, third reading amendment number 25 to Senate File 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment passed. Division been called for. All in favor, please stand. Sixteen. Amendment passed. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 17. Reading clerk, please read it.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 17, budget affected, section 3, capital construction.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, would move third reading amendment number 17 to Senate File 1. This is if you're having deja vu all over again, that would be appropriate. What this bill does and the difference between this one and the previous time it was offered is there was some dispute and some discussion about prior language in line 6 that used the terms non-private. There was some concern that might use tuition dollars or other dollars that would indeed be inappropriate, and certainly that was never the intent, but nevertheless, certainly could interpret that way. This changes that to clarify that the only funds that will be used for this are private or federal funds. Just to review refresh your recollections very quickly, what we're talking about here is that the community college in this municipality and in the municipality in the center of the state, there are two community college campuses, and both those community college campuses have extensive interaction and programs with the university. And there are a number of baccalaureate programs as well as other cooperative efforts that happen in those places. And right now, it's been ad hoc and kind of catch can as far as space and utility and facilities. They're spread all over both of these campuses, and what this is simply coming to us for permission, legislation permission, to study this and look and see about the establishment of joint facilities. There's no appropriation established with this now, nor was there yesterday. and would urge your favorable consideration to see if we can find a more efficient and effective way to house these joint programs. We'll always have the opportunity later on to approve or deny requests for any kind of facilities. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, a question on this amendment. I guess two questions. One is, if this would be a level one study, and it's a joint university and community college project between both those campuses, would we be talking about using state funds to construct those buildings on those community college campuses? And the other question is, if that was the decision of the level one study, once we've got our metaphorical foot in the door, what happens to, I'm not sure about here in Cheyenne, but what happens to the University Extension building in Casper?
Senator Vasey.
Sponsor gets up for their second time. What's a level one study? Is that lunch with the proper administrators, or is this, I've seen these studies between the university and the community college. I've been involved in a couple of them as a BOCES director, and they can go on and on and on, or else you can do it. Matter of fact, the good senator that used to sit right here, who was the president of one of these, we used to meet for lunch in a little cafe in Barrow, a pretty good blue plate specials, and that's where a lot of this was settled. And I guess we should have called it a level one study, but.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. With regard to the question of the UW Outreach Center in Casper, that, if I am correct, that is will be sold, but not in conjunction with anything here. It's going to be sold in conjunction with the Casper College, I forget the name of the project, Gateway Building, in which we're providing the $10 million general fund elsewhere here in the budget. So it has nothing to do with this amendment.
Senator Lartson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll have the same question that I really don't think was answered. I think it was yesterday that this same amendment was up, but the required level one study report shall be submitted only with the approval of the respective community college. If they're going to be using federal funds, and quite frankly, that could be the university's share of federal funds that come in or others, why should not the studies be submitted anyway? Why do they have to have approval of those two institutions when the money source is going to be, somewhere, university money is going to be expended? I still don't understand why they have to have the approval of those two bodies.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President. I was confused about the amendment on second reading as well, and so I went and had a discussion actually with the lobbyist from the university, and in answer to the previous question, I think it has to do with where the building is going to be built, so that you're consistent with the planning that goes on with the rest of the campus there. But the key thing here is that they're going to submit it to the State Building Commission, and the trouble they've been having, the university and the community colleges are seeking to work together. And that's something that in this state is a great blessing, because elsewhere these academic institutions have been cutthroat competitors, and the result has been very bad for the people of those states and very expensive. Here, thank goodness, our higher institutions, education institutions, are trying to work together. And the bureaucratic difficulty they're having is, as they start to do these projects, as they do this level one planning, the State Building Commission is taking the point of view that it's perfectly happy to talk about a university-only building, but one that's done jointly, no way. And so we're trying to cut through that bureaucratic problem. And that's what this amendment really does, and it's what it's all about. So I would urge the support of it. It will further the cooperative effort that we've got among the higher education institutions in this state that enables us to have a single state university and a community college system and have them to work together for the benefit of all the people of Wyoming and all the students of Wyoming. They've hit a bureaucratic obstacle, and this amendment will cut through it.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, that's just ducky for these two community colleges. But what about the other five? They all have university programs, and they all have students who are taking university courses at the other five community colleges. This smacks almost of special legislation. I'd like to ask the sponsors why none of the other five community colleges, actually five and a half because of the Gillette campus, which now calls itself Gillette College, but all due respect to them, why wouldn't they be included in this? Why not Sheridan? Why not Powell?
Senator Coe.
Yeah. Well, Mr. President, one of the interesting things in the interim when we did the task force on community colleges and we particularly addressed the CapCon side, this never came up. And when we were looking at the CapCon side for community colleges, we had a big debate, and the senator from Gillette, I'm sure, could tell you the same thing, whether or not we would go out and create our own level one, level two, level three process for the community colleges in the commission, or we would use the state resources that are already in place. Now, House Bill 114 uses the state resources to do that so we don't reinvent the wheel. But one thing that came up, we talked about the university on their planning. They do their own planning. They have in place, and correct me if I'm wrong, they have in place with the engineering school, they have all their own individuals that come on board to do their own planning for them, level one, two, and three. So I guess I don't understand where this amendment's coming from. This issue never came up that I'm aware of in our task force discussions on community colleges.
Senator Larson, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. I heard about the red tape. I heard about all of that. I still have not heard why the required level one study reports shall be submitted only with the approval of the respective community colleges.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I can tell the sharks are circling. When you look at this, boy, it's amazing. And I guess, you go back, and I guess there could be a goblin lurking under every bush. To the good senator from the beautiful county of Teton, the reason why is it's a cooperative effort. And the point is that neither the university nor the community college can go forward in this cooperative effort. And so it's just simply, if you and your neighbor are going to agree to build a fence together, you would hope that the plans would be mutual and that neither one of you would charge ahead with that approval of the other one. It's the same deal. It's a cooperative effort that's been under work for some 3 years. They're working together to make this. Both the university has its plan. The community colleges have their strategic plans. They want to make sure that if this goes forward and then this study and ultimately if this building is ever built, these centers are ever built or these buildings are ever built, that it complies with both the university's needs and the college's strategic plan and its needs. And so it's just simply neighbors working together to work out and have a common agreement so that neither one can force something to do the other one doesn't want to do. So that, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the intent. And that's why you have that provision in there, just as simply so neither one can have ride roughshod over the other. That's that one. To my good friend from Sheridan County, the reason why, my understanding of the reason that these aren't in there is because we can't do them all at once. There's no, ultimately, some bill, you're going to have to start somewhere, and there's some order that these things are going to happen in. And ultimately, my understanding is eventually it'll happen across the state, but you got to start somewhere. This is where it started. We're talking about joint uses and increasing technology and increasing the ability for our students to not have to, for our citizens not have to necessarily have to go to Laramie. If you check and think about the community programs and the joint degree programs that you have in every community college in this state with the University of Wyoming. All of them ultimately are going to require additional facilities, upgraded facilities, modernization over time, and you're going to have to go somewhere and you've got to start somewhere. They've been working on this 3 years. When they started to go ahead, they ran into the roadblock that my fellow senator from Natrona County talked about, and so we're back here. As you work your way through the bureaucratic maze, this is the answer. Now, it may not be the answer that you like, but nevertheless, that's the answer that was given, and so we're trying to work through the bureaucratic maze. And, Mr. President, if we keep moving the cheese, how are the mice ever supposed to find it? And so vote it up or vote it down, but ultimately we'll be back here another year, and whether it's Sheridan or Casper or Powell or wherever, we're still going to come back and we're still going to have to deal with the same issue. And if you don't like it now, we'll be dealing with it next year, but we got to start somewhere.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 17 to Senate File 1 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment had failed.
Division
been called for. If those in favor stand. Those opposed? Amendment have failed. Next amendment for consideration is third reading amendment number 18. The reading clerk will please read it in.
Senate File 1. Third reading amendment number 18, budget affected 302, Medicaid contingency appropriation.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment 18 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is it, you'll recall that we provided to the Department of Health the reversions up to about $4.5 million to be spent. It makes those reversions effective or available to them effective immediately, and this is partly to address the impacts of the amendment where we took a list and we prioritized the list. The Department of Health says now that we prioritize that list, some of the money is going to have to become available more quickly. So I urge you to support the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. We're voting on third reading amendment number 18 to Senate File 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Third reading amendment number 24. Reading clerk will read in the amendment.
Senate File 1. Third reading amendment number 24. Budget affected 302, Medicaid contingency appropriation.
Senator Massey.
I move third reading amendment number 24 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, this deals with the Developmental Disability Waiver Program for children. And before I get started, I think that most folks in here know that I have a son who has developmental disabilities and is on the Children's Waiver Program. I don't think and I don't believe I have a conflict of interest because he already has a waiver. And this amendment deals with those who are on a waiting list wanting to get a waiver. That's about a year or two long. And as a result, nothing we do in this amendment, whether we vote it up or vote it down, is going to make any difference in his situation. Mr. President, the amendment does this. It states that any of the funds that we get from the economic stimulus package coming from Congress and through the White House that involves federal funding or releases some general funding, state general funds, pertaining to Medicaid and is lawfully or eligible to be used for the Developmental Disabilities Waiver Program, that up to $2 million of that will be applied to this program. And the reason for it, Mr. President, is because the waiting list for the Children's Waiver Program is too long. It would take about $17 million, based upon an estimate from the Department of Health, in order to eliminate the waiting list for children and adults in Wyoming. Now, the governor in his budget has already recommended funding for eliminating the waiting list for acquired brain injuries. Okay, but the waiting list for adults and children will grow. Now, the Joint Appropriations Committee in the budget right now has appropriated some money to begin dealing with that particular problem. If you were to take a look on the budget bill on page 43, $4 million has already been appropriated towards this problem. And $1.4 million of that will deal with the transition issue, and that is for those children who are for those persons who are moving off the children's waiver, they won't have to put on a waiting list to get on the adult waiver. And then the rest of the 2.6 will deal with the waiting list for children and adults. Mr. President, I had a handout here that came out about 10 minutes ago, and it should be in everybody's box. And it discusses the Developmental Disabilities Waiver Program and provides some information. Here are the key facts. The reason that we offer waivers is so that these folks won't be institutionalized. They qualify. Their disability is severe enough that they can qualify to be institutionalized, and that's estimated to cost a certain amount of money. But not all of them need that degree of services, so we provide them with a waiver so that we don't have to pay as much. And every child who receives a waiver and who's not institutionalized saves the state money because the cost in order to deal with their developmental disability is not as severe. Mr. President, I refer the body down to the table that's at the lower part of this page. And taking a look at the left side of that table, you can see what the waiting list situation was like about 2 months ago. And for children, the average wait was almost 11 months, and the longest person was nearly 2 years. The longest wait for the person was nearly 2 years. If we didn't appropriate anything into this budget, if you look further to the right, the average waiting list would grow to about 2 years, and it would be as long as 3.5 years. Now, we did apply some money towards that. So the average wait, if we don't apply anymore, is going to be up around 1.5 to 2 years when we come back. So, Mr. President, that's what this amendment does. It provides, with the stimulus money that's coming through, and takes what's projected to be around $80 to $100 million, perhaps, in this area, $2 million of it to apply to children's waiver. Finally, Mr. President, the last thing I wanted to mention is the importance of this. 90% of brain development occurs by the age of 3. Just like those with acquired brain injury, early intervention makes all the difference in the world to this population. Those on the waiting list are those who are born and put on the waiting list, and they would be nearly, could apply any extra time to my second time, I would appreciate that, Mr. President. And those who are born are the ones who go on the waiting list. Now, they can get some services through the developmental preschools, but they aren't going to get the health care services and many of the other things they need through a waiver program. This is life-changing, including those with the most severe disabilities. That's the reason for bringing this amendment and try to reduce the waiting list just for the children as much as possible. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Scott.
First, in case there's any confusion on our rules on this, I call for the eighth amendment. Mr. President, the earlier you get these children into the services, the better they're going to do. The earlier you can intervene on these cases, the better it is for the children. I compliment the Appropriations Committee for the creativity with which they've already provided some help in this area.
Mr. President, a year and a half waiting list for children in this area is a disgrace. I urge the Senate to vote aye.
Further discussion on the amendment? Not the question is. Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. President, I think this is probably a good use. My only concern, and fortunately we're getting to the end of budget amendments, we're now putting in here, it seemed to me that a day or so ago we did a bill that
that outlined how that money was going to be spent and what the agreement would be with the governor and when it was coming in and what we were going to try to do. That's what I recall what happened. We're already into spending money we don't have. And I understand that this is contingent if we do. I think the use is wonderful. I agree totally with that. We're about to the end of the budget process, so I don't see any more of it coming right now. But let's not get spending all that money that hasn't even passed Congress yet, I don't believe, before we get it and allocating it, before we then know what the priorities will be that the Appropriation Committee can do in conjunction with the amendment that we passed to work with the governor.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now, these are the hardest issues to deal with because we have, it is an important part of our budget, and these people do need the assistance. At the same time, waiting lists are a fact of life. It's how it manages the whole program through waiting lists. That's just part of it. With respect to this particular amendment, right now we don't know how much money is going to be available. We've talked about ranges of FMAPs, and it seems to me that what we did in the JAC recommended amendment is we put the Medicaid down at the bottom of the list. And that Medicaid obligation is going to be fulfilled, and we're going to have to fulfill it with dollars. I have no idea whether or not we have enough money in the budget to meet that Medicaid responsibility. We've got the $20 million in the auditor's office, and it may be that we find ourselves in a situation where the entire stimulus package is required to meet the Medicaid responsibility. If we met all that responsibility, then I think we began to take a look at the, hopefully we would reduce or eliminate waiting lists. But we don't know how much we're going to get. We've already tied the hands of the Department of Health with respect to saying you've got to put in $4 million to adult and children waivers. You have to put in approximately $4 million for the developmental preschools. And so the question is how many more requirements do you impose, which in effect may put you in a position where you're going to have to come back and appropriate more money to maintain the system, even though we've had an economic stimulus to go into this area. It may be that there's enough money there to meet all the obligations. I don't think we simply know. And to say that this is the highest priority to meet the first item before you do anything else is just one more set of handcuffs that you put on the Department of Health as they go out to administer a program that is going to be stressed and is going to be taxed. Thank you.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Really, just on one small point, it was mentioned that sometimes the alternative for people that qualify for the waiver is institutionalization. And to my knowledge, there's no one at the Life Resource Center at the state of Wyoming that would be the institution in Lander that qualifies for this waiver. I mean, there are just no children at the facility. So I want to make that clear. It's not a choice between one of the two, and I didn't want you to think that was part of this mix.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time? Senator Massey.
With regard to the institutionalization, there are folks at the center, whether children or adults, that do have severe developmental disabilities. And the center there provides some very good services. They don't need a waiver once they get to the center, though. The waiver is intended to help these families and children get the services in their communities and close as possible to their homes. The best estimate, and I asked a lot of folks, $80 to $100 million in this area is what's going to be coming through. This is only a very small percentage, and as the amendment indicates, it must be lawful and it must be available. Waiting list, a fact of life, Yes, and the adult waiting list will continue. And I'm not sure this $2 million is going to get rid of the children's waiting list, but traditionally, historically, we haven't had a children's waiting list in Wyoming, and if it's existed, it's only been for a small period of time. And remember, we're getting rid of the ABI waiting list in this bill. And finally, Mr. President, as far as affordability, this does save the Medicaid program. That's what the whole purpose of a waiting or the waiver is that it's not an entitlement. It's something that we choose to do in order to try to reduce our total Medicaid bill.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 24 to Senate File 1 pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquivel? Geis,
no.
Hastert,
aye.
Honeycutt,
no.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
no.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions, Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines,
no.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
Amendment 24 have passed. I'm not saying that we're talking too long. But while we've been talking here today, one of our members have turned a year younger. Help me wish Senator Sessions happy birthday.
Take me up. No, wrong song.
Great way to celebrate your birthday. Senator Von Flatern.
I have the privilege of the floor, please.
You may.
I'd hate to miss another fellow senator that absolutely got a year younger since he's been in the Senate now, but this is also Senator Dockstader's birthday today, so please wish him a happy birthday.
What a party we're having. The next amendment for consideration is third reading amendment number 19. Reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 19, budgets affected, section 303, employee benefits.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 19 to Senate File 1. The other day when the Appropriations Committee Chair presented our budget, we had some good discussion about our costs to our state employees relative to their health insurance. I just went and did some checking on in my particular company, and just some numbers for you for the members to consider. Now, this is to the 08 number. If you recall, in our budget bill, we put in 09 as well. But we're paying $346 for an employee. For 08, it's $561. That goes up another 15-20% for 09. For an employee and a child, we're paying $624. The state employees cost $1,112. For an employee and a family, we're paying $970. And for the state, it's up to $1,271. Mr. President, the purpose of this amendment, as I understand it, this information is readily available to the governor's office, just to have him provide that information to the Joint Appropriations Committee so we can really see and look at the comparison to what we're giving our state employees relative to what most of us in the private sector have to have available to our employees. But ask for favorable consideration.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and for this amendment, the data is readily available. We had a presentation on the basic data up in Committee 10, first week of the session. And let me just give you a few of the comparisons. These are the health plan costs, not the premium costs, because it doesn't include the administrative cost, but the health plan costs, including the members' contribution. For adults in the largest of the insurers and the private insurers in the state, $3,068 a year. State employee adults, $4,463. I know there was an attempt to control for severity there so that you're comparing comparable employees. The attempt may not have been fully adequate, but there was an attempt. For children, figures are a little better. The largest private insurance state, it's $1,013 a year. Again, the total cost, including the members' contribution. State employees, it's $1,384. The governor's office has the basic numbers, and they show that our plan is significantly more expensive in total costs than comparable private plans. And I think the key part of this amendment, he speaks of an economic analysis of what's going on. Now, the real question is, why are they different? Do we need to change something in the structure of what we're doing for our state employees so that we're getting the same degree of coverage, the same degree of ability to buy health care at a lesser cost? There may well be some incentives in the way we're doing things that are perverse, some incentives that could be introduced to improve things. I think it's well worth looking into, because the raw figures do show that it's significantly more expensive than what the private sector is doing.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding in health care benefits is that the price of the policy is directly related to the conditions within the policy, and whether your deductibles, some of all of those, and we had the discussion on discretionary clauses here the other day, but it's all directly related. And so my question is, and raw figures to me don't do anything. If I was a single person, not on Medicare, I might add, that was looking for an insurance policy, if I wanted to have $5,000 deductible, yes, my health care policy, I might have been able to afford it. But my question is, when you do an economic analysis, is that going to include a comparison of benefits along with the price?
Further discussion on Amendment 19. Senator Scott, for your second time.
Mr. President, in answer to the last question, if it's competently done, it has to.
Further discussion? Third reading amendment number 19 to Senate File 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. We are on amendment 20. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 20, budget affected 337, endowments 2.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 20 to Senate File 1. Mr. President, this deals with a potential conflict that we have between the budget bill and another bill that's working its way through the legislature. On page 51 of the budget bill, there's an appropriation to four community colleges of some endowment money, as well as to the university in subsection B, and with a reversion date of 2014. Meanwhile, there's a bill, House Bill 155, which has cleared the Senate Education Committee and is waiting on general file, that essentially takes all of the various reversion dates that we've had in statute over the years, and we've appropriated four or five different times we've appropriated funds to these endowments, and essentially eliminates them and just simply goes to a five-year period and a structure stating that the person who makes a matching commitment to a community college or to the university has 5 years to fulfill it, which is in the five-year period is just the same as we have in the bill right now. So this amendment just essentially says that if House Bill 155 does pass the legislature and is signed into law, that the provisions in the budget will just simply conform to what's in the bill.
discussion on the amendment? Question being called on amendment, third reading amendment 20 to Senate file 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. We are on third reading amendment number 21. Would the reading clerk please read that in?
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 21. Budgets affected 339 AML funding.
Senator Bivot.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 21 to Senate file 1. Senators, you may recall that we had some discussion last year under the School of Energy Resources and trying to come up with some language to bring uranium into the area of what we'd be talking about and what they might do to assist our state in that particular area. We requested that the School of Energy Resources come with a plan to be distributed to the Minerals Committee. They did do this. And, Mr. President, the plan, at least in my opinion, and that's why I bring the amendment and I will talk to you about it, is not quite what I was looking for. And having talked to members of the industry and also members of the Energy Resources Council, of which my colleague from northeastern part of the state is a member of, was not consulted in this regard. And the other thing that I had some concerns about was the cost. And under the plan submitted to the Minerals Committee for a two-year period, the cost was $3.2 million, and I thought that was extensive as we moved into an area like this. So, Mr. President, what my amendment does is reduces the amount from 1.9 for $1.6 million, as shown on line 8 of the amendment, but it extends it for a two-year period. So instead of $3.1 million that was requested of the Minerals Committee by the School of Energy Resources, we're asking for $1.6 million for the two-year period. And, Mr. President, what I put in the language is I think that the School of Energy Resources, under the direction of the University of Wyoming Energy Resources Council, just to refresh everyone's memory, that's 7 people appointed by the governor, 5 from the private sector, 2 from the legislature, 1 from the House, 1 from the Senate. And the Wyoming mining industry may develop, and that's a key word, Mr. President, may. And then you can look at the amendment in areas that we came up with collectively working with people that are involved in this to see what we think is important. It in no way, shape, or form says that this is all you shall look at. It's kind of a litany of what we think is important relative to what this program may do for the uranium industry in Wyoming. The last thing it does, Mr. President, we just passed my good friend from the tall senator from Albany County's amendment. In that, we have to change 2010 to 2011. I'll be glad to answer any questions. I think this really is a decent program. I think we needed to rein in the spending a little bit, give them a little more direction. Be sure and include the Energy Resources Council. They are a very, very important component of this, talented people that understand what we're doing, and I think this will help them.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I support the amendment. Actually, we do not want, and that was not the intent, to turn the School of Energy Resources in the uranium and into another enhanced oil recovery. That's not what a school does. I think we have to be very careful about it. That it does say may, and I think there are some good guidelines in here, so I would urge you to support the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question B on third reading amendment number 21 to Senate file 1. All in favor say aye. Excuse me. We have a roll call. Increasing.
Anderson. Bebout. Burns. Case. Coe. Cooper. DeCaria. Dockstader. Esquibel. Geis. Hastert. Honeycutt. Jennings. Johnson. Landon. Larson. Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer. Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Basie.
Aye.
Bonflatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes.
Amendment 21 have passed. We're now on Amendment 22. Reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate file number 1, third reading amendment number 22, budget affected. Additions to 300 sections.
Senator Nicholas.
This is the greatest.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 22 to Senate file 1. This is a restatement, an amendment to the economic stimulus section that we had previously adopted. The changes are over on page, actually begin at page 1. When we began meeting with the executive branch, they felt that the clean water state revolving fund dollars would have to go out more quickly. And so we've provided they would be appropriated much more quickly or directly to the SLIB board. And then with respect to the next item, Romanet 4 on page 2, we put in an emergency provision so that if it turns out that some dollars have to be expended immediately before there was time to implement the process we have, that the governor would have that ability, provided, though, he is required to give us a report. And then we included the management council at the request of our members to expand the scope of the reports that go out. I would ask for your support.
Discussion on the amendment? Question been called for. Senate third reading amendment number 22 to Senate file 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. We are now on amendment 23. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 23. Budget affected. Addition to 300 sections.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 23 to Senate file 1 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is another area that I'm seeking to correct from the last budget bill we had, and this goes into the areas of the distributions to cities and towns. If you see the sponsors on there, one of the sponsors was the representative that had the House amendment, which we melded into the final budget bill. And looking at this, Mr. President, we had a base for our cities and towns. And going through the process, that base had worked up to basically $20,000 a year, except for the smallest towns where it was 10. And when we went back into the process, that base got cut back down. And what this amendment basically does is restore the base up to the 20 and the 10. And to do that, it would take just short of $2 million or $1,960,000. There is a pass-out sheet that you guys should have. You can take a look at it and see how that tracks through. But really, I feel this is just basically, last year I didn't want to take that base down, and for whatever reason it went down, and I'm just trying to bring it back up where it was.
Discussion, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think that the final amendment for the distribution was prepared by the sponsor of the amendment. Yeah. Vote no.
Further discussion? Question been called on the amendment, third reading amendment number 23 to Senate file 1. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson? Bebout? Burns? Case? Coe, Cooper, DeCaria, Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
Yes.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Honeycutt is
excused.
14 ayes, 15 noes, 1 excused.
The amendment has failed. Senate file 1, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt excused. Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Basie?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 24 ayes, 5 noes, 1 excused.
Senate File 1, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 1 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Considerations of bills in general file.
Mr. Chairman, before I make any motions here, could I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
It's interesting, you know, when you sit down and decide the criteria for the decision you're going to make, had you got this budget accomplished earlier, it would have been easy. Had you done it much later, that decision would have been easy. So now here we stand at 3 o'clock, neither early nor late. But I will say to you that you've worked really hard on the budget. And I think that you've all done very well, and certainly the Appropriations Committee has done very well. And I think that, you know, there's brain power and there's willpower, and I saw a lot of willpower being applied here. So if you'll, just for a minute, a little extroverted thinking as to what we're going to do. You can see the handwriting on the wall, so to speak, the number of bills on general file, and I could hold up the number of bills in committee. It's considerable. So I think in order to try to accommodate the workload, what I have decided that we will do, we will come back on a normal time on Monday. We'll start at 10, work a normal, or on Tuesday, I'm sorry. On Tuesday, we'll come back on Tuesday and work a normal schedule. For the remainder of the week, being Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I want an early take-up. We're going to take up at 9 o'clock. The reason for doing that is because if we run late all the time, that compromises the committees that work upon adjournment. It always puts that extra time on them. Those committees that meet at noon are in a box. They can't start earlier. They can't start later. So they have that bit of time to work with. So if we slide our time schedule a little bit to the lower end, those committees in the morning perhaps can start earlier. Perhaps those committees in the afternoon don't have to go quite as late. There was a song that many of us older people remember in regard to time in a bottle. And the bottle gets smaller, I think. And so we're going to have a lot of work to do. We're going to come back on Tuesday. We're going to start at 10 o'clock. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we're going to start at 9 o'clock. and we'll go later if we have to in order to get some of this work done. So with that, Mr. President, I would move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 17th, and hope that you might all travel safely.
Okay, we have standing committee reports.
February the 13th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 96, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 13th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 2, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 13th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 42, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Announcements, Senator Von Flatern.
Mr. President, House Bill 96, with Railroad Quiet Zones, which was just read in, has an appropriation, and I ask that it be re-referred to Appropriations Committee.
Without objection, House Bill 96 will be referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, can I have the privilege of the floor for just a moment?
You may.
Mr. President, just to follow up on an idea that the Majority Floor Leader had, but I wanted to extend a little bit further. The Appropriations Committee worked incredibly hard in this session because of the moving target of the budget, morning, noon, and night. And if we could, I would appreciate it, Mr. President, if we could just stand up and applaud Senator Townsend, Senator Peterson, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, and Senator Massey for an incredible amount of work in a short period of time under incredibly difficult circumstances. If we may do that, Mr. President.
Thank you. Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President.
Well, thanks to everybody else on the committee, too. A lot of work for everybody.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, House Bill 299 or 229 engrossed. Court security reimbursement has an appropriation on it. Ask that be re-referred to committee number 2, appropriation.
Without objections, House Bill 229 will be re-referred to committee number 2, appropriations. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet up on adjournment Tuesday night. We'll take up House Bill 176, B X-ray equipment appropriation. House Bill 226, engrossed, state land grazing leasings, and House Bill HJ8, equine resources.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Tuesday, February 17th at 20 minutes after the noon recess up in S14, where we will take up House Bill 134, the Natural Resource Large Project Funding.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee number 3 will meet Tuesday, February 17th, 30 minutes after noon recess in S16 to take up House Bill 287, Helium Property Tax, and House Bill 145, engrossed, Rural Health Care District's Mill Levy.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Tuesday, the first day we're back, at 8 a.m. in S-19. I considered resetting that to 7 a.m., but I think the rest of our meetings will do at 7 if we're going to have an earlier start. This one will be at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. We'll hear House Bill 104, Special District Elections Polling Place Requirements. That's a continuation. House Bill 250, Classification of Fire Chiefs After End of Term. House Bill 44, Surveyors and Engineers. House Bill 195, Real Estate Act Amendments. Thank you, Mr. President. 8 o'clock.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've scheduled most of the bills that we have other than the new ones, so if you throughout the week, if you want to get that list, you can come look at my list or check with our Secretary Judy, and she'll give that, tell you when you're scheduled. As for Tuesday, we have committee number 2, appropriations, will meet at 1 o'clock to consider House Bill 111, the Clean Coal Task Force, House Bill 24, engrossed criminal background checks, retirement system, and then it will meet upon adjournment to consider House Bill 91, public building fire and electrical plan review, House Bill 118, engrossed Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act, and House Bill 252, Wyoming Retirement System Hospital Participation.
You've heard the motion that the Senate will stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 17th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned.